This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's January 11th, 2019, and we're live. I know most of you don't listen live, but I really appreciate the ones who do. And if you are one of them, you can call and talk to me and my guest today. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Today, we're going to talk all about women's sexuality and lying. We have someone returning to the show, but I'm going to remind you who she is. Lux Alptrom is a writer whose smart commentary on sex, feminism, and pop culture has been featured in outlets including the New York Times, Cosmopolitan, and Hustler. Her debut book, Faking It, The Lies Women Tell About Sex and the Truths They Reveal, examines the surprisingly complicated story behind feminine deceit. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Lux.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on this show.
So your book opens with the election of Trump, and I can't help but read it like now, today, and think, you know, then you were like, oh, this is a really bad thing. And of course, to think, looking back on it, like, oh, it's so much worse than we all thought it would be. But you do raise this interesting point about what happens when public figures, when men lie versus women lying, and that women are much more likely to be accused of lying. And in this case, it was like Hillary Clinton was thought to be untrustworthy or not telling the whole truth or all these things. And so as we've gone along in his presidency, you know, he's like told more lies than probably any, let's just go with more lies than any other president in the history of presidency. Someone can challenge me on that. Call me on the hotline there, guys. But he's told more lies than ever. And yet we don't see the media, except for certain sort of liberal pockets of media, calling him dishonest. So why does society, this is a big question, believe men over women again and again?
I mean, short answer, the patriarchy. Long answer, I think that the way that we view male lying is always couched in more positive terms than the way that we view women lying. So, you know, with men, it's often positioned as mastery or getting one over someone or just being smart enough. I mean, I don't think this is necessarily how people see Trump, but generally speaking, a lot of times when men are deceitful, it's assumed to be because they have a good reason or because they're smart and navigating the situation with you know, some cleverness. Whereas when women lie, it's assumed to be destructive and harmful and irrational. And a lot of that, I think, is just because of who is seen as the point of view character in society, which is usually a white man. And, you know, if a white man is the person we consider quote unquote normal, then they're going to see their lying as justifiable and everyone else's lying as harmful and bad and not a good thing. And I think that kind of idea of men being the default viewpoint in our society really shapes how we treat men and women's lies.
So you organize the book in this very snarky kind of fun way, which is that each chapter is a quote lie, or it's you frame it in terms of like the most common lies that people talk about and discuss. And chapter one is I Just Came. And it's all about female orgasms and women faking orgasms. Not just because of the sex angle, but I found like I could dive into this and maybe read a whole book about it. That's how much content was like jammed into this particular chapter. I just felt like every 5 seconds I was like, yes, preach. Uh-huh. Yes. Like as I went along. So why do women fake orgasms, Lux?
Well, I think that it's a very complicated topic. I should say up front that I am not against fake orgasms. I think a lot of times they're positioned as, oh, women don't know what we want. We are kind of insecure about our bodies and we really want to please men and make them think they're doing a good job, even though they're not doing a good job, but we're too shy to speak up. And while that's certainly the case sometimes, I think a lot of times women fake orgasm because there is an expectation that orgasm happens during sex, and that expectation isn't always aligned with an individual woman's experience of either good sex or the sex she wants to have or the sex she just happens to be having. And so if you feel this tremendous pressure to have an orgasm, because if you don't have an orgasm, you're going to have to deal with someone asking why you didn't have an orgasm. Sometimes it just makes more sense to fake it and either fake it because you are enjoying the sex, but you're just not able to have an orgasm, or you don't want to have an orgasm, but you don't want to discuss that in detail, or fake it because you're tired and you just want to end things without having a lot of discussion. I mean, I think that there are many reasons. There are probably as many reasons to fake as there are reasons to have sex. But I think it's often tied to the fact that orgasm is expected.
Right. Right. And it's interesting, your argument of the orgasm as a kind of way out, of both bad sex and good sex, out of bad sex when you're like, please let this be over, or a way out of good sex when you're like, this is awesome and I'm done. I sort of know myself and my body and I think I'm done, which is an interesting sort of like, it's just an interesting dichotomy there that it's a way for women to sort of control like the scenario, right? To women to assert themselves. But why do they have to assert themselves with this particular lie? Because of course, there's these myths and misinformation about female orgasms, about sex in general, right? That like our goal for all sexual encounters is orgasm. So you have to have that sort of signifier. And women are like, okay, if this is done and I'm done, I guess I have to like act the signifier out because no one's going to believe me if I just say I'm good. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because I do think the pressure to have an orgasm comes from a pretty good place. You know, I think it's pretty undeniable that generally speaking, men have more pleasure during sex than women do, especially in heterosexual relationships. And I think that it is admirable to want to make it so that women also experience as much or equal amounts or more pleasure than their male partners. But then you get in this thorny area of, well, how do you quantify pleasure? And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, we quantify pleasure through orgasm, except that's not a good metric for a lot of people. I mean, I think when we talk about the orgasm gap, it's just so strange to me because it kind of suggests that everybody has to have the same number of orgasms in order for everything to be equal, which is such a strange way to conduct sex. Because let's say I'm in a heterosexual relationship and I'm someone who can easily orgasm 3 times and maybe it's rapid fire, and my partner, who's a cis man, can only have 1 orgasm and then his refractory period is hours long. If I have three orgasms and he has one, is that better sex for me? Is he being cheated now? I mean, I think when we start thinking about sex in this kind of tallying way of who had more orgasms, it actually distracts from what sex is supposed to be about, which is human connection and pleasure and just enjoying being with a person, not bean counting.
Well, it also illuminates just how difficult it is, especially for women, to talk about having sex without orgasm. Yeah. I mean, this is another thing where when I raise the issue in a class or something that like women can be very satisfied by their sexual experience without orgasm, you know, people look at me like, you're probably just saying that.
Yeah.
When it's like, no, I'm not just saying it. And second of all, like I've talked to thousands and thousands of women about their sex lives. And third of all, I can have enjoyable, satisfying sex without an orgasm. So yeah, it's true.
No, there's just this idea of like, oh, well, you are cheating yourself. Or it's this idea that it's a consolation prize somehow that I find really, really upsetting. And I think it's so strange. I mean, I mentioned in the book, there's this idea of like, if a man is comfortable pleasuring a female partner and says like, I don't care about my orgasm, or, you know, we can have sex for a little bit and it doesn't matter if I have an orgasm, he's lauded as this feminist hero.
Mm-hmm.
You flip it, then suddenly the woman is a victim. And certainly some of that does come from this history of us devaluing female pleasure.
Absolutely.
But now we're suddenly saying, well, but female pleasure has to look a specific way, or you're not really having pleasure, which is also extremely unhelpful.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it becomes prescriptive, which
yes,
you also talk about in the book, which is like, now we have to have sex this certain way. And also, you know, I know from my years of experience, it's actually true that if you put the word orgasm on the cover of a women's magazine, or you put the word orgasm in the title of a book, it is more likely to sell. Did you know that?
I believe that.
Yeah. So it's like a point that everyone, it's like we can all point to this and we can all agree collectively, this is what women want. If we can't agree on anything else about what women want, we can agree they all want an orgasm. And even that is rife with mythology.
Yeah.
No, okay, we got to take our first break. Hold that thought. When we come back, oh my God, your chapter on porn is just, God, it should be required reading for every human being on the planet right fucking now. I was practically crying happy tears when I read it. So I want to go into that next. But let's hear from our great sponsors. And when we come back, more with Lux and talking about the lies women tell about sex and the truths they reveal. Happy New Year. I hope you're ending the old year and starting your new year off right by prioritizing your pleasure and sexuality. Our friends at the Pleasure Chest want to remind you that sex and pleasure is a practice, just like anything else, and it takes some level of commitment to keep it as a vital part of your life. Practicing pleasure can be as simple as committing to adding one thing to your routine that makes you feel more empowered in your body. Try a weekly bath dedicated to fantasizing. And of course, don't forget to pick up a little CBD bath bomb for that. Or wear a butt plug or Kegel balls when you do your weekly errand. Like any practice, the more sex you have, the more you want to have sex. Do you need a New Year kickstart? A perfect place to learn more is through their Pleasure Ed program, a year-round series of free, inclusive, pleasure-based workshops offered at their LA, New York, and Chicago locations. And a few Pleasure Chest locations will be featuring happy hour workshops at an earlier time, so you can drop by for a drink and stock up on some G-spot, bondage, electrosex tips, you know, on your way home from work. Plus, all workshop attendees receive 15% off their purchase. If you can't make it in, you can always go to pleasurechest.com and get yourself something special. Also, they've got great sex ed information on there. Remember, if you use coupon code Tristan at checkout, you get a free massage candle with every purchase. Everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to HelloTushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to thank you once again for taking the survey. Okay, so one thing I want to tell you, there are two prizes up for grabs. They've picked the prize winner for across the entire network of pleasure podcasts, and someone from another podcast won. Okay, and it's anonymous, so we can't tell you who, but they've won. And then the person who won from Sex Out Loud, their email starts with E, like everyone, V, like Victor. I emailed them, and they just wrote me back with their mailing address, and they are about to get a package worth $375 of toys, accessories, books, DVDs. So congratulations to email starts with EV, and thanks to the rest of you for filling out my survey. Hey, I've been talking about the show on the show Care of Vitamins, but they just contacted me and having a wild, wild special that is just for you, listeners. So in general, when people talk about New Year's resolutions, I'm like, fuck that. Because we should all be doing our own self-improvement on our own timelines. But doing something to improve your health this year is a good thing. I think anyone who makes a health-related resolution is wise. And by that, I do not mean dieting. Fuck dieting. Okay. So Care of Vitamins can help you if one of your resolutions is, hey, I want to eat better or get all my vitamins. It's really, really easy. You go to their website and you take this quiz, right? And basically something like 90% of people actually aren't getting all the FDA recommended nutrients or vitamins, but we don't know it. And the thing is, when you take the quiz and just talk about your diet, your exercise, what you eat, what you don't eat, actually they figure it out for you. They figure out the most likely deficiencies in your diet, which is amazing because then I don't have to think about it. And it's like other subscription services. I also don't have to think about that. Every month, a box comes with these packets, and it's a month's supply worth of vitamins personalized for me. They're in little bags that say Tristan. I don't have to count pills. I don't have to put them in pill boxes. It's great, and it's great for like sort of your busy on-the-go self, which I know all you are. And then also they have these like quick stick powders, which can be added to your monthly delivery. And it's just kind of this vitamin booster, which I really like because for those of us who travel or generally burn the candle at both ends, I sometimes find that if I stick religiously to taking the vitamin boosters while I'm on the road, I'm less likely to get run down and sick. So that's really good, right? Now, here's the thing. The January special, this is January only, that they're doing just for you guys is 50% off your first month of personalized vitamins. Half off. It's less than a grande latte. So you're going to go to takecareof.com. You are going to fill out that quiz, which is super quick and easy, but also gives you a lot of information. You're going to enter the promo code Tristan, and you're going to get 50% off your first month of vitamins. I'm telling you, folks, this is really good. This is a good idea if you want to make a resolution for 2019. So again, go to takecareof.com and enter the promo code Tristan. I'm talking today with Lux Alptrom about her new book, Faking It, The Lies Women Tell About Sex and the Truths They Reveal. Now, Lux, I was just lauding this chapter you do on porn, which also has a bunch about sexuality in it. And the first thing I thought was Cindy Gallup, who does this website, Make Love, Not Porn. She is not anti-porn. It's about, quote, real-world sex and people making videos of real-world sex and sharing them. She has become kind of a media darling, and she's so smart and clever and quick-witted, so it's obvious why. But you actually have a compassionate criticism for Cindy Gallup, which I haven't read elsewhere, and a sort of a counter-narrative about her experiences. Like, on the one hand, she kind of agrees with these anti-porn feminists that porn is like ruining our sex lives and is making men act out in a particular way and have certain expectations for sexual encounters. And you want to offer kind of a different narrative. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, anytime someone talks about porn ruining sex, the question for me is, which porn? Because as we know, porn is not one specific thing. And obviously, it usually tends to be about whatever is this kind of mainstream straight male gaze, heavy on the facials, potentially heavy on rough sex, which women are presumed to not be into. And, you know, I certainly think that there is one kind of sex that often gets more play and more focus in porn, just like all media, where one narrative tends to be promoted more heavily. But I also think that the idea that porn is making us have sex a certain way, A, means that porn is our only exposure to sex, if that's really what's happening, which is a problem, and speaks to this larger issue that we're not exposed to the diversity of ways to experience sexual pleasure, and we are taught over and over again that there is one right way to have sex. And so, you know, if you are raised knowing that there's many different ways to experience sexual pleasure, and you see a porn movie, you're not automatically going to assume that this is what sex is supposed to be. But if you learn, on the other hand, that there's one move that's really going to just drive everybody crazy, there's one perfect way to experience sexual pleasure, and you see a movie and it looks like people are really, really into it, then yeah, you're going to be conditioned to assume this is how people have sex. This is the kind of sex I am supposed to be having. This is what all women like, quote unquote. And it's that belief that there is one thing that all women like that I think is so much more damaging than any porn movie, no matter what the porn movie shows. And I mean, I cite in the book as a counter narrative the very, very popular sex advice manual, She Comes First, which I believe it was published in like 2004, 2005. It was a ode to the beauty of cunnilingus, and just argued that, you know, all women really want clitoral stimulation, and the best way to ensure that women orgasm is through cunnilingus, and that also, as the title of the book lays out, that women in heterosexual sex should orgasm before their male partners, and that this orgasm should come through cunnilingus. And that's a very specific way to have sex that not everybody is going to like. But we get these books by acclaimed sex experts that say, you know, this is what sex is supposed to look like. And when you're hearing that message that there's a way for sex to look like and that no other way is okay, like that to me is what's really damaging us, is this belief that there is the best way to orgasm, that there's the best way to experience sexual pleasure.
I mean, that critique of Ian Kerner's book, She Comes First, is so sharp. And again, it's about these prescriptive ways to have sex, right? And also, I think it's damaging to say everyone loves oral sex, everyone comes from oral sex. I think a lot of people, you can say a lot of women like it, a lot of women love it, a lot of women come that way, but not every woman. And so this is what I love. I think one of the huge strengths of this book is there's a tremendous amount of nuance, and you give time and space to those nuances instead of try to, you know, it feels clickbaity now, but we didn't necessarily know what clickbait was then, but it feels clickbaity to call a book She Comes First, right?
It's like,
of course we're going to click on that. Of course we're going to read that. And I feel like you refuse that model. You refuse to make absolutes. You refuse to say this is the one way. You refuse to say orgasms are this. And that, to me, is why your book is so refreshing, because I do think lots of people dive into sex books and then have to make these like grand generalizations. And you just refuse to do that, which is one of the things I really love about the book. And we have to take another commercial break. I don't know how that happened. Oh, I know, because I was talking about vitamins for like the whole first time. Anyway, get your vitamins, people. We're going to take another break. Let me first tell you what's coming up in terms of sex ed classes at Pleasure Chest. In Los Angeles, January 13th, Negotiation to Impact, part 3 of 3. It's a series. January 16th, She's In From Out of Town, Getting Clean to Get Dirty. It's all about preparation for anal sex with Tina Horn. New York City, January 16th, Blowjobs and Beyond. January 18th, Joyride, a sex positive comedy and variety show. January 16th in Chicago, Ultimate O, Pussy Pleasing. January 23rd, Kinky and Creative Blowjobs. Go to pleasurechest.com and click on events for more information. We will be back right after this break.
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, fans, we'd love to hear from you. Do you have a story about faking an orgasm? Or lying about sex in any way, that would be interesting. You can call us at 866-472-5788. You can also tweet at us at Sex Out Loud Radio. I'm talking today with Lux Altrum about her book, Faking It, The Lies Women Tell About Sex and the Truths They Reveal. Now, as I get further into the book, I'm struck that there are what seems to be a lot of double binds for women. Like, there's a lot of lose-lose propositions. One of them, for example, is makeup, that men are like, I don't like a girl who wears too much makeup. But then we can spend 2 hours putting on makeup to look like we're not wearing makeup, which is a way to sort of conform to beauty standards. And this is kind of one of a million examples you give about how there's no winning. Right? There's no winning in some of these situations. It always is kind of the prospect of lose-lose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think beauty culture is such a thorny one. And it's part of why we see it just pop up with all these like hashtag no makeup campaigns or anti-Photoshop campaigns that I think often really miss the point, which is that as long as we live in a society where people and especially women are judged by their appearances first and foremost, we're always going to be setting people up for a losing game. Because even, not even just in dating, but like in going to get a job, there are measurable effects that women who wear makeup or women who conform to a certain beauty standard get paid more money, get better promotions, are seen as more competent. And it has nothing to do with job performance and everything to do with this beauty standard that we enforce. So it's really difficult for me to say, oh, well, you were born with bad skin. Too bad. Like you just lose. You don't get to have the job that you're perfectly qualified for because you need to be quote unquote honest and not wear makeup or not do skincare. You need to just show everybody what your skin naturally looks like. And I mean, yeah, as long as beauty is this prerequisite to being treated like a human, you're kind of always going to have this necessity for makeup, for skincare, for all of these different things that help people achieve this very limited concept of beauty.
In the chapter called I Have a Boyfriend, you talk about the lies women tell when they are not interested in men, when men hit on them, proposition them, flirt with them, and women want to say no, basically. And often they say, like, I'm not interested, and that doesn't work. So then we have to come up with these other stories of, I have a boyfriend, I'm engaged, I'm married. Some people even wear wedding rings when they go out. And this chapter is, it's brutal. It's brutal, this one. One of the things you talk about is the pickup artist community, which is all about how to pick up women. And then even a woman who delved into the pickup artist community and tried to sort of figure out what women need to know about how to get picked up, sort of. And one of the things that's most striking is this story you tell about someone called the Modern Man who wrote a piece called How to Talk to a Woman Wearing Headphones.
Yeah.
It's like all right there in the title, but talk a little bit about this.
No. So that was this blog post from the Modern Man, was like the blog of a pickup artist. And it went viral a few years ago. And it really is all in the headline. It was this idea of like, oh, well, you see a woman wearing headphones. Here's how you get her attention. Because there was just this assumption like, well, even though she's wearing headphones, which clearly flag that she's listening to something and does not want to talk to people, you as a man have a right to invade her space and get her attention because you want to talk to her and your desire to talk to her overrides her desire to exist in this space. And I've actually had men do these things to me because I tend to walk around wearing these very large, very visible headphones. And I'll have people kind of wave their hand in my face or do something where it looks like there's some sort of urgent thing.
Right. Like you're going to be hit by a car, right? Like I'm fine if someone like signals me, take off your headphones, like you're about to fall in dog poop. Like, thanks. Yeah. That's a heads up. Thank you.
But then it's always just like, oh, we were just on the train together. And I'm like, who cares? This is not relevant. This is not something that I need to hear. But this assumption is that because they want to communicate, I must listen.
Right. And also, you know, there's a discussion in the book about some of, I forget which guy said this, but a guy said it. And that is like, women love to be swept off their feet. So this idea that like you put headphones on because you're on the train and you want to concentrate on what you're doing and you don't really want to flirt with anyone, but don't you want to be swept off your feet? Like, don't you want the rom-com to come to you? Which basically signals that women don't actually know what they want and that our boundaries are totally movable based on what men think we want, which is like to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was this conviction that came from J.T. Tran, who styles himself as the Asian playboy. And he was really, really married to this idea that like, yes, of course women want their personal space. And of course, women want to be left alone. But if you can craft this perfect fantasy, what woman doesn't want that? What woman doesn't want this like amazing romantic? I think it's just this like very, again, it's this way of navigating things so that men can still get what they want and can justify what they want, which is women's attention. And just very, very presumptuous, this idea that, well, the problem isn't that women want, it's not that women want to be left alone, it's that women don't want to talk to low value men. That's effectively how they've framed it. So if I'm high value enough, then I can make myself worth this woman's time. When, you know, oftentimes it's, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to talk to a stranger. You know, this idea of, oh, wouldn't you want the perfect rom-com pickup? Probably not, because a lot of those are extremely creepy in real life.
Yes.
Like I've had the whole like, ooh, you meet a stranger on the train and you swap phone numbers. And then 5 minutes later, I was like, I feel very weird and uncomfortable. I don't want to pursue this.
Well, this calls to mind Cardi B's ex showing up at her concert, yes, right? And sort of half the internet was like, oh, his passion and love for her is so huge that even after they broke up, he showed up at her workplace without being invited. God, he's in love. And then the other half was like, this is stalking behavior. This is directly like in opposition of what she asked, which is to not have contact with you. It sort of blew up the internet for a minute, and it demonstrates this point perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so many rom-coms, when you really think about it, they are demonstrating stalking behavior. They are demonstrating abusive behavior. But in the context of the rom-com, it's wanted, it's appreciated, and it's romantic. And I don't think that I would want an ex to show up at my workplace. I don't think that that would be romantic. I think it would be really, really uncomfortable. I mean, personally, I also don't think that public proposals are romantic. Obviously, some people do, but I think this idea of putting women in this very public position of having to navigate a potentially uncomfortable situation of a man's emotions and a man's emotional response, I think it can be really manipulative. But we so frequently just sort of make women's romantic lives a spectacle and expect women to just deal with that in a way that doesn't insult or upset men.
I mean, it is kind of a setup to say yes, right? Because yeah, if you're on the big jumbotron and you're like, I'm ambivalent, or could we talk more about this? Or you, like, that's not, there's no room for you to say that. The setup is it's yes and it's always yes, which is interesting. And I think also your discussion about reproductive control of women's bodies and birth control and people concealing that they're on birth control or in order to sort of have control of their bodies, it's another argument to add to the reproductive justice movement is this notion that we have to lie in order to simply make decisions about our own bodies and health.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people miss in this, like, why do women lie? Is that the stakes are very high. And it often really is this, like, can I get basic access to my own bodily autonomy? Like, how can I ensure that I'm not going to be impregnated against my will? And sometimes if you're in a situation where men feel that they have a right to control your body, then you have to lie. Like, lying is the only way to ensure that you have control over your own body. And that's a really terrifying and risky position to be in. But yeah, I mean, I talk about non-consensual condom removal, which is often referred to as stealthing, and how women, I think rightly, are very afraid of their male partners making the unilateral decision that condoms are not on the table. And when you are afraid of that, then, you know, saying, oh, I'm not on the pill, we have to use condoms because otherwise I'll get pregnant, like, that might be a lie. But it's a lie that helps ensure that you can have the protected sex that you want, that can keep you feeling safe and protected from STIs. And it is really terrifying to have to be in a position where you feel like you have to lie in order to get that basic human control, that basic human decency. But that is the situation many women find themselves in.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I want to take another break. I have no idea how to segue into this, but I do want to tell people about the Swing Set Takes Desire. Swing Set Takes Desire, I know I've talked about it a million times, but they announced their dates for next year, November 2nd to the 9th, 2019. Their new website is swingsetdesire.com. I'm really excited that in late February, I'm going to air a two-part episode, which we recorded live in Cancun, and may give you some insight into what was happening on the ground. So, you know, look out for that when it comes about a month from now. Let's take another break. And when we come back, we will continue this conversation. Happy New Year. I hope you're ending the old year and starting your new year off right by prioritizing your pleasure and sexuality. Our friends at the Pleasure Chest want to remind you that sex and pleasure is a practice, just like anything else, and it takes some level of commitment to keep it as a vital part of your life. Practicing pleasure can be as simple as committing to adding one thing to your routine that makes you feel more empowered in your body. Try a weekly bath dedicated to fantasizing. And of course, don't forget to pick up a little CBD bath bomb for that. Or wear a butt plug or Kegel balls when you do your weekly errand. Like any practice, the more sex you have, the more you want to have sex. Do you need a new year kickstart? A perfect place to learn more is through their Pleasure Ed program, a year-round series of free, inclusive, pleasure-based workshops offered at their LA, New York, and Chicago locations. And a few Pleasure Chest locations will be featuring happy hour workshops at an earlier time, so you can drop by for a drink and stock up on some G-spot, bondage, electrosex tips, you know, on your way home from work. Plus, all workshop attendees receive 15% off their purchase. If you can't make it in, you can always go to pleasurechest.com and get yourself something special. Also, they've got great sex ed information on there. Remember, if you use coupon code Tristan at checkout, you get a free massage candle with every purchase.
Hi everyone, we're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Lux Alptrom about her book, Faking It, The Lies Women Tell About Sex and the Truth They Reveal. So Lux, one thing that I was curious about as I was reading this book is it is about the lies women tell, and some of it is about these broader cultural tropes and myths and moments. And then it's also about lies that individual women tell people, a lot of times men. When you were putting together this book and you decided to frame it around women's lies, did you ever fear that you were going to write a book about that made women look like liars.
Well, so when I first had the idea for this book, as I note in the introduction, I initially thought that what I was going to discover was that women were fundamentally honest. And this idea that we were dishonest and that we were lying was all just this patriarchal myth and just a lie that was being told about us. And as I investigated more thoroughly and realized that women were lying, it actually became important to discuss the ways that women lie. Because I think once you understand why women lie, it becomes really clear that it's about survival and it's about coping with a really unfair system. And that the lies that women are commonly accused of telling, like for instance, lying about sexual assault, don't make sense. Like that's the least likely lie for a woman to tell, because when women lie, it's usually to evade scrutiny. It's usually to kind of pass undetected and eschew attention. Whereas lying about sexual assault brings attention onto you, brings scrutiny onto you, does all of these things that most people don't want. And yeah, I mean, in a way, yes, I am saying that women are lying a lot, but I'm also explaining that it comes from an extremely rational place that's primarily about self-protection.
I mean, this is a good point, and it's clear. I wanted to ask you the question because I feel like the book provokes that question, but I do feel like you make the argument of the framing of the book. And in the conclusion, you talk about Emma Sulkowitz, who is the Columbia student who did a year-long performance piece where they dragged a mattress around to protest the university's handling of their sexual assault case. And it made national, international news. And of course, as all rape and sexual assault survivors are usually, they were not believed. They were trashed in the media. Even the person that they accused got a settlement from Columbia and said that his rights were violated, and on and on and on. But as you said, so Emma had a different perspective on, obviously, on doing this piece, right, in calling attention to sexual assault survivors. But I think it's much more likely that people, especially women, don't want to come forward. And you talk about Anita Hill also in the conclusion, and I couldn't help but think, oh, this book went to press before Christine Blasey Ford came forward. And again, was trashed in the media, and her perpetrator ended up being on the Supreme Court, which is sort of like the highest. It's such a grand scale. Like, it's one thing if like someone is expelled from college and you're like, ooh, God, that he was expelled from college. This guy, not only was he not expelled from college, he was made a Supreme Court justice, which is just mind blowing to many of us. And I wonder, what are your thoughts with the Christine Blasey Ford thing happened after having written this book?
Yeah, I mean, so it was fascinating just timing wise. I started the conclusion right as Me Too was exploding. And then Christine Blasey Ford, the Kavanaugh stuff, that all happened about a month before the book came out. So yes, like significantly after it had gone to press, but right before it came out, when it was really top of mind for me. And it's complicated. The way I feel very complicated about it. Because as I note in the book, Anita Hill really kicked off a long-term trend of women feeling more empowered to come out and to talk about their experiences and to acknowledge these as things that men had done wrong and not things that they should be ashamed of, not something women should be ashamed of specifically. And, you know, when we saw Me Too, it was kind of this huge explosion of women and sexual assault and harassment survivors coming out and saying, like, these are my experiences. These men should not be allowed to do these things. And not just coming out, but being believed in a way that Anita Hill had been denied. And I think that, you know, Christine Blasey Ford, all of that happened about a year after all of the Harvey Weinstein stuff broke. And we want to feel like, of course, it's different. Of course, she's going to be believed. And in many ways, it was extremely different. I mean, when you look at Anita Hill, senators on both sides were really grilling Anita Hill. Whereas when we saw with Christine Blasey Ford during that hearing, the Democrats were largely really supportive. It became a very partisan thing where the Democrats were primarily supportive, were really sensitive, were believing, and the Republicans were less so. And I do think we are making changes. I do think we are getting to a place where women are more believed, where survivors are more supported. But I think when we see what happened with Christine Blasey Ford, and when we see that Kavanaugh, even after all of this, was still confirmed and still got the same result as Clarence Thomas, it just shows how much further we still have to go.
Yeah, because, you know, many of the think pieces were about just how credible a survivor Christine was, right? She had such intense prominence in the community and her career and her educational background. And so people were saying, you know, there's no way to to bring this woman down, right? We can't make all the dumb arguments that we make about other survivors and victims. And yet she still wasn't believed by at least the majority of the, you know.
Yeah. Congress. And it's certainly interesting that it shifted from, you know, Anita Hill a little bit nutty and a little bit slutty.
Which is a direct quote of somehow a journalist.
Discredit her. It shifted from that kind of like, oh, she's crazy, to a different sort of like, oh, well, we believe someone raped you, just not this guy. And it is fascinating to see that, like, we are now at a point where at least wealthy white women get that kind of credibility and belief of something bad happened to you. But there is still this desire, at least from Republicans, at least from some corner of society, to protect the man, even as we try to square it with recognizing that women are unlikely to come forward and subject themselves to this humiliation if they weren't actually assaulted.
Right. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit on the show last week about surviving R. Kelly. And of course, some of the criticisms that have been lobbed against those survivors, especially the ones who appeared in the documentary, are like, oh, they want money and they want fame and they want their 15 minutes. And I could not think of a worse thing to be known as in American culture than a sexual assault survivor, because literally you're taken down before you even get to necessarily tell your own story.
Yeah, I think, like, this idea that women are accusing men of sexual assault in order to get famous, in order to get money, in order to get whatever, it's just such a low opinion of women's intelligence, because you have to believe that a woman's going to see that over and over again when you accuse someone of sexual assault, you usually aren't believed, you're harassed, your physical safety is compromised, and you're going to see that continually happening and saying, but this time, when I do it, I'm going to get the multi-million-dollar jackpot.
Yeah, and we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
Well, the book is called Faking It, The Lies Women Tell About Sex and the Truths They Reveal. And it's by Lux Altram, our guest tonight. I want to say it's required reading for everyone. And I think it makes the perfect gift for the man in your life for Valentine's Day. You're welcome. You can find more out about Lux at luxaltram.com. She's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Lux Altram. Let me spell it just for a second. L-U-X-A-L-P-T-R-A-U-M. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer. I'm going to send you the book, A-Rod, and everyone at Voice America. Thank you, Lux, for being on the show. And thank you for writing this book.
Thank you for having me on the show. And thank you for being a part of the book.
I'm also interviewed. There's a few choice quotes for me in the book you can read. Tune in next Friday, everyone, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, you can get me across all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. You can get the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Until next week, bye.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.